It's life on life's terms. Here it is, Life on Life's Terms podcast. I'm just going to say that we're not affiliated with any 12-step program. I'm Tom Robinson.
Our website is lolterms.com. I'm Chris Mandeville.
And tonight we have Dan as a guest. And Dan's been in treatment. That sounds funny.
Worked in treatment.
for quite a long time, and he's going to briefly qualify, but I think it's probably we're going to just talk mostly about treatment, and we'll hand it over to you, Dan.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Thank you, Chris. This is very exciting. I like the name Life on Life's Terms. Yeah. You know,
LOLterms.com.
LOLterms.com is very cool. Long time ago, I had no idea what that meant. So, as you mentioned, I've worked in treatment, and I've been working in the treatment field since the fall of 1997, and I have experienced the full gamut. The full gamut.
Oh, I bet.
And Dan was involved in both of us getting sober.
Yes. So. Yeah.
I'm sitting here looking at this like,
he was my counselor.
This is awesome.
He was my counselor.
Mine too. And so this is a pretty special podcast, actually.
And again,
Definitely is.
Getting emotional over that, I can do that today. Before I couldn't. But anyways, you know, how did I end up getting to that point of working in this field? Well, having an issue with alcohol, having an issue with drugs for years and years. And at the beginning, Tom mentioned, yeah, he was in treatment. Yeah, I was, you know, in the old days.
Yeah.
I did go to treatment back at Stanley Street in Fall River.
Oh, in Fall River. I never made that stop, but I heard it's kind of...
I think it's still there.
It's still there. It is really sketchy. That was back in the days when they did three-week programs.
And oh, yeah?
So we stayed there for 21 days.
21 days.
I remember going
isn't
in there.
Isn't there a movie called 21 Days? I think there is.
28.
With Sandra Bullock, mm-hmm. I think, 28 days.
Right, and she just takes that big limousine and breaks the cake or something like that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, yeah. The wedding, her sister's wedding.
Definitely. So I got there, you know, I did an awful lot of stuff. I look at going into Stanley Street. I always talk about this whenever I'm sharing any experience with anybody. Coming from Cape Cod, being a spoiled, rotten brat, you know, going into an inner city detox. I went into this inner city detox from the Cape to Fall River.
Big difference.
So
culture shock.
It was. I walked in there with a pair of chinos, topsiders, a whale belt, a polo shirt, a barracuda jacket.
Barracuda.
Yeah.
Barracuda. With a members only in his bag.
This wasn't during the 80s, was it, Dan?
No, it was 1990, actually.
Oh, 90, okay.
That's when I graduated.
High school. Yeah, that's when I was supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it all, that's basically when most of it started. Me.
Mm.
But
yeah, I had years to go.
Yeah.
But you both got it, which is phenomenal.
Yeah, which is
phenomenal.
Fantastic.
Yeah. You know? So 1990 was the year I went into treatment, and one thing that's been incredible is that's by the grace of the higher power I believe in, which is God today.
Mm-hmm.
And I've managed to maintain October 17th, I celebrated 27 years clean.
Holy crap.
And that has not been easy.
You know what? The best April Fools I ever did, like right after we got out of the house when I moved to Thatcher Street with those dudes, I texted everybody in a group text. You're not going to believe it. It was like first thing in the morning, April 1st. Not going to believe it. Dan Bolin. Whatever.
That's okay.
Relapsed. And they were like, no way. April Fools, suckers.
Yeah, right?
It was excellent.
Ouch. That is funny. It really is.
Well, it's the last thing anybody expects.
Yeah,
right.
It's the last thing any of us expect in being in recovery, too. There's some stuff we have to do.
Absolutely.
You know?
And there's a lot of different approaches. And being in, you know, having been in this business, and unfortunately, it is a business.
It's a big business now. Huge.
Well, sure.
Because there is no money in curing anything. There's money in treating everything.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But business is not a four-letter word. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right. Right.
It isn't. And right. if you can make something profitable, that's when change comes about.
Yes.
Anything that is profitable, people will pursue it. And in order to get any change, you need a lot of people to pursue it and put all their energies into it, because mm-hmm. everybody wants
yeah.
to
with become, the right motives.
Everybody wants the comforts of life. You know.
Yeah.
And
absolutely. Shiny things are nice.
Shiny things are nice. And it causes people to put all their energy and efforts into finding the right way to do it. However, I think there's something sidelining that whole process.
Yeah.
And it has to do with numbers, people getting numbers of completions of programs. Whereas when we went through, it was you earned your way through, and if you weren't doing the right thing, you were out.
Absolutely.
Which is a huge thing that I think is responsible for creating the correct environment. I don't know. Dan, of course you know a lot better than me, but I'm just talking from experience.
Yeah. Uh-huh, and that is experience. I remember at the program you guys went through, and we had to maintain a specific number at all times, because that's what the funding was for.
Right.
We didn't work it that way, obviously.
Right. It just yeah. got somebody else.
Yeah. I always, it was like, when it got near the end of that program, it was like build a bed. You know,
we were supposed
to have 29 in there. I had 35 one time, just because people needed to come in. They needed treatment.
Yeah,
and right.
It's huge. And what I've learned, I mean, that was, you know, Turnabout was, and I will say the name,
yeah,
it was one of the best experiences of my life and most educational.
Yeah.
It woke me up to addiction.
Oh.
And
right.
Just addicts in general.
Yeah. I don't know that we should mention the name of the company.
No, I don't think we should mention the name of the company, but they do an awful lot of good for an awful lot of people.
Sure,
absolutely.
Yeah.
So we don't need to go there with that. They'll probably sue.
Yeah, right.
So
we're not affiliated.
Yes, not affiliated with anybody. So, you know, I learned that, and that was at a residential place. Now, I also did detox work. You know, I worked at in southern New England, a detox facility, and I learned an awful lot about what it was for people coming off of heroin.
Oh, yeah.
What it was for people coming off of booze.
Yeah.
People coming off of heroin will tell you they're going to die, but
people coming off of booze will die.
Yes.
Yep.
Unless they're dehydrated, they're going to be okay.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, now, was that a program that put you on a detox? Did they put you on to maintenance, or did they suggest after further recovery, after you got a little detox and you're physically okay?
Actually, what they did is they would detox you. Then if you qualified for what they referred to as the STIT program, which was short-term intensive treatment.
Oh, okay.
If you qualified for that, you went on to that. If you didn't qualify for that, then you were moved on and basically warehoused.
It
works.
A holding?
You get to a holding. You go to the holding, go to the halfway house. And then it's kind of like the way we refer to it these days is lather, rinse, repeat. Detox, holding, halfway house, relapse, and, you know, there's no need for that.
I was in a holding at the Kingston House, a wet shelter in downtown Boston, and it was nasty.
I bet.
We used to feed which is pretty cool. You know, we got to feed the homeless. They would come in, and they were all drunk. There would be a shit face, and they'd be walking up to the counter, getting their food, you know what I mean, making a big mess, would clean it up. But they would put cots. I mean, literally stacked right next to each other, so that you had to crawl to the end of it to get off.
Oh,
walk down the hallway.
How many of the drunks got on the end and flipped the bed over?
Oh, I don't. You know? I don't remember. But
you got to sleep with everything you own because someone's gonna steal it.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. And I remember the every night there was an ambulance, somebody going out, at least one person going out in an ambulance every night.
Yeah.
And I was there for 3 weeks, and it was, eye opening. My beautiful girlfriend at the time had a nice condo right in Somerville that I could have gone to at any time, but I was so desperate. I didn't know what to do. You know what I mean? And of course, that didn't stick. You know, I ended up flying to Florida from there, but to further treatment down there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's where my grandmother lived. She died 40 years sober. So, but I you know, that didn't stick, you know. And I came back, and I was back to my own ways, you know.
Yeah.
Once I came up here, it was like that was my sober experience and my sober vacation or something, you know.
Yeah. And you, Dan, you talked about the lather, rinse, repeat. I'm grateful that that's not my story. You know, I did like, I think 3 detoxes and then it was jail treatment, you know, thank God. I'm great. I'm wicked grateful for that because I don't know. And this is like my first run and it's almost 16 years, you know, December 27th will be 16 years, God willing. And, you know, it's so it's hard for me to not. No, it's not hard for me to identify, but it's I don't know those feelings, so I have to hear that. I have to hear that from other people, you know, like like our last guest, he 85 plus detoxes. You know what I mean? Like and
that's a lot of lather.
Yep, it is.
Oh. Yeah, that's like wrinkles from the tub, you know what I mean?
and we were talking earlier too about a few people that are no longer with us. You know, from
not
what I'm doing
gets
now.
Everybody a chance to repeat.
Yeah, what I'm doing now with the work is much more geared within mental health, dual diagnosis, and still, you know, I love my substance abuse work. And it's in Hyannis, you know, of course, on the Cape, beautiful place. Hyannis currently has the highest opiate addiction rate per capita in the state of Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the overdoses are brutal. Just this year alone, 3 clients since January overdosed and died. And it's just really scary out there when, you know, treatment, it's, you know, you guys mentioned treatment today, and that just, that gets me motivated and everything because the treatment out there needs to be changed.
It's changing the wrong way.
Yeah.
It seems to me what I know that it does. Yeah, I mean.
It's changing the wrong way. Like,
it is completely changing. The days where you used to have the 18 to 24 month therapeutic communities, all of a sudden they brought political correctness into treatment and recovery, and it does not work in all cases.
No.
You know,
what I needed what we went through.
Yeah.
I did.
You know, certain people do. I mean, as I've noticed from being in treatment for so many years of going from the detoxes to the residential, to the outpatient, from working with DYS, working with men, working with women and everything like that, everybody has a different path of the recovery. And those paths need to be opened, and they're trying to just sit there and cookie cutter it right now.
Yeah,
yeah.
It does not work. There are people that will be involved with 12-step recovery and do phenomenal with it.
Yep.
There are other people that can't do it.
Yeah.
And they find religion, they find a medication, they find anything.
Yeah. I'm not opposed to those things. I'm not. But for me, I would abuse it. I would. I know I would.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone does a medically assisted or chemically assisted treatment and they do it the right way and end up coming off of everything, that's the goal.
Bless them, right? Yeah.
That's the goal.
Right.
It's not to be on a substance for the rest of your life.
And even with even with the harm reduction techniques, you're looking at Suboxone, you're looking at methadone, you look at also Campral, Antabuse, and using naltrexone for alcohol and everything like that, they're even meant to stay on for a limited time and then to taper off and to lead towards abstinence, which is really the goal within recovery. However, some people...
It's kind of like whose goal?
Right.
Yes.
Certainly not the manufacturer's.
No, no way. their goal is their bank account.
Yes.
You know?
And they're making
unfortunately.
Quite a bit.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I know I'm putting up their buildings in Cambridge right now.
Yeah.
Sorts of them.
The guy that made OxyContin just passed away at, 97 years old with like his company's worth $31 billion. You know,
that's great.
It's scary, but those are some things that get us off track of recovery too. We get angry at all the stuff we're seeing out there rather than looking to the person that's recovering from addiction, the person that's trying to recover from alcoholism, where, you know what, sometimes they might need a hot dog or a bowl of soup rather than to be lectured as to that, you know.
Oh, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly not a discussion to have with someone new in sobriety about how the pharmaceutical companies are taking advantage of you, man.
You're just an invoice, dude.
Right, right.
Okay. You're just a number.
You do know they're calling the lawyers right now and going after.
Yeah. But like walking in here, there's a little plastic sign. It says, it's hashtag 2069. That's how many people died in Mass.
Yeah, it's crazy. Know? Is that what it
last
is now?
Year. Yeah.
Mm. Last year. Last year.
Last
okay.
year. That so. Was the total. And, yeah. like, I remember, I think I was actually in Turnabout when hypodermic needles became no longer
illegal,
and you could buy them over the counter. And I was like, this is not good. This is going to explode. And it did.
Well,
it did. It absolutely exploded.
It exploded, but a couple of, and again, not to play devil's advocate with
it
that.
Did, it did help with certain diseases and
the
stuff.
The transmission of hepatitis, the transmission of HIV, all of that began to go down and everything.
Yes, I mean, that's good. And it never stopped me from using, just because I had to use the same needle 50 times. It looked like a lightning bolt because it was bent twice.
The I plunger was MacGyver.
From the other one that
I was
using
MacGyver,
before.
Dude. Hey, yeah. Heat that up a little bit. I got to stick that back together. Give me some earwax. Give me some earwax. This thing's sticking.
Yeah, that's bad. That's bad.
Just use the puddle. Just get the water out of the puddle.
Yep. Just wipe that shiny stuff away. That rainbow stuff, just swipe it away. Oh, yeah. Been there.
Oh, sorry, Dan.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it.
Couple low bottom guys. Here.
It's just sitting there hearing this is awesome, you know?
Oh, yep. Man.
But
it's like to watch, for those of you guys that are watching out there, just to see these two, you know, knowing them 16 years ago when they started on this path, it is incredible. And hearing a little bit about both of them, what they're doing in their lives today,
that's
crazy. An incredible thing. It shows that you can do all sorts of stuff. You stay clean, you stay sober with your life, you can do amazing things.
And you can go through all sorts of stuff and stay sober.
Yes.
Because trust and believe, I've been through some shit. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and everybody's like, how do we deal with this? How do you deal with loss and recovery? How do you deal with everything else in recovery? And it's like you deal with it the same exact way.
Yeah, you deal with it.
Yeah, exactly. Deal with it.
By showing up.
Showing up, you know? And doing the next thing and just it's like you have to accept and realize that that there's nothing there that's going to solve anything by using it.
Nope.
Yep.
That feeling of comfort that you look
at. No matter how bad your disease is telling you that it will.
Right.
Oh, you don't have to feel this. You know exactly how to get rid of this, you know? But it's temporary. We'll get through it, you know?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
As long as we have the right support and do what we're supposed to do on a daily basis, you know?
I don't want to feel sad. Let me rip my life apart and
end
up in jail in a month and like sell everything I own. And
I just built it up. Let me tear it all down.
Yeah. Lose everything. Because
I don't
want to
feel sad.
Yeah.
Another part within recovery that a lot of people overlook is dealing with trauma and dealing with those issues that accompany it. Where if you're doing 12-step recovery, you go through, you do a real 4-step and everything, not one of these little checklists and looking for all the happy horse shit, you know.
Right,
but when you're
right.
looking for the real stuff, you can get traumatized by going through that. And a lot of times, the person taking you through it doesn't have experience and
get traumatized
by reliving that, and writing that stuff and kicking up stuff that you never talked about,
right,
you know,
right.
and not having the correct outlet. One of the suggestions you gave me when we were there, and I followed through with it for 3 years, was counseling. I went to a counselor, and I had done a fourth, and this guy that I talked about this on the last one, the guy I worked with had never worked with an alcoholic before, and I gave him a copy of some literature, and he was like, wow, that's amazing. But this whole fourth step thing, like, now, if you think of something on that, do you still have a feeling attached to it? And I was like, yeah. He's like, well, then you haven't processed it. And we did a thing called EMDR. And, like,
EMDR is awesome.
I was minimizing all the major traumas that happened to me in my life and, like, just brushing them off, sweeping them under the rug. Like, yeah,
I did that for a long time, too.
You know? And, like, you know, that's why writing a fourth and doing a fifth, like, I think right away is more important because you're sitting there stewing on that stuff, you know, that you haven't talked about in years. Mm-hmm. You know, I remember the first time I went to counseling and the lady had me tell her my story. I felt like 100 times worse when I left that place than when I walked in. I was like, what the hell did he send me over here to do this for? I feel like shit now. You know, That was so that she could, you know, find out, all right, this is what we got to work on. We got to focus in this area.
Yep.
You know?
Well, what do you think of the identity? I think a lot about the identity piece of it. If you identify yourself as someone who does X, then you're going to do X or is X, you're going to be X or whatever it is. You know, I think identity, self-identity is a huge part because you sit there and you think that I'm no good. I'm always going to be on the us and them thing. I'm always going to be on that side. I'm never going to be on this side.
And one thing that works incredibly well through that is affirmations. If you guys remember that there was always a wham, bam, it was like heavy-handed, but you'd always get a compliment eventually.
Oh, yeah.
I'll use the word eventually.
Yeah.
If I were in the position, it'd be a lot different because positive affirmations and pushing someone up, it's one thing I require with my clients today. Three things, okay? And this is going to sound weird, but first thing they have to do, they have to make the bed every day. Second thing they need to do is they need to say something good about themselves every day. Third thing they need to do is to write something down, whether it's in a journal form, in a rap, in a poem, in whatever they want to do to be able to express the feelings and the emotions. And the reason for that, making
cool.
the bed gives you discipline.
Yeah.
You know, if they're in recovery, it's 86 to 88 and boom, boom, you're supposed
right,
to do.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, but if they're not, it gives them that discipline to get going through the day. So the good parts about making the bed, A, it looks nice. B, you're not going to attempt to get back into it if you're depressed. And C, it might be the only thing you do right all day is make your bed. You know, okay?
So
we look at that.
There was a time when we had to.
Yes.
I remember.
Or suffer the consequences.
I haven't thought about that. That's interesting. I
adopted this, guys, from Toronto.
Oh, yeah,
okay?
Absolutely.
And you're right. Like, it definitely does give you a discipline, you know? I started reading book Against the Stream today because I have a job where I can do that. I'm not going to tell you what that job is, but
thank God for the unions, boys.
Yeah.
Thank God.
But like, you know, just trying to work on my spiritual condition because, you know, if that's not fit, then, you know, I'm
that's for sure.
I'm not doing well,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
at all.
You brought up some books, and that's another thing, too, that's very different. For a lot of times, you know, when you've got people with going about 12-step recovery, they've got the big book, the basic text with AA, NA, but they overlook a lot of the other ones, like the Just for Today NA book, the Daily Reflections AA book.
Oh, yeah, I used to read all that stuff.
They also, Emmett Fox, Sermon on the Mount.
Oh, yeah, I never got into that. I probably should. I like that. I've heard a lot of stuff about
it's
that.
It's awesome.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then here's another one that's totally going to bring it all around is the Four Agreements. All right, it's an Eastern philosophy book.
That's what this
phenomenal.
Is based on.
Yeah,
Against the Stream.
Read the original, the Four
yeah.
Agreements. You don't personalize, you don't assume, you do the best that you can, and you're impeccable with your word. And all of those things assist within recovery as you're looking at that spiritual journey, so you don't have to pigeonhole somebody anymore.
Yeah,
it's not just one friggin' way to skin an apple. There's a whole boatload of stuff out there to go about staying clean and sober and living life on life's terms.
Yeah. Have you ever read The Power of Now?
Mm. Not yet. It's on the list.
Tolle. Anyway, Tolle.
Promote him.
Those
are good
he
book.
Doesn't need promotion. He had, was written years and years
oh.
ago. But anyway, the point of it is, and he says a lot of stuff that's kind of woo-woo, you know, it goes a little deep. But the thing that's beautiful is we don't have 5 minutes ago. We don't have 5 minutes from now. We have now.
Mm-hmm.
We have now.
Yeah.
And we go around in this haze of thinking of these thoughts, of this story. This huge story that we have that we're telling ourselves that's taking place, but all that's taking place is right now.
Yeah.
all that stuff is gone. It's not happening. All that stuff is going
to
happen.
But
we
have the attachment to it.
Now. Well, we have the attachment to it, and that's where what occupies our mind. And I think about my issue with memory that I've had throughout my life that I think that I have a bad memory. I don't think I have a bad memory at all. And when I used to smoke weed, it was like really, really pronounced. because I was scatterbrained. Because what happened was I would become very introspective. In other words, I would be in my head, and that's what. But if you sit there and just concentrate on stuff like breathing and the way your feet feel and just what your body feels like and just observe without judgment, you just like bliss out, because if you can step away from all that stuff, you realize that this is what's happening.
Yeah.
What's happening is now, and there's no problem. There is no problem.
Keep your head where your feet
always,
are.
Unless there's an arrow coming at you, you know what I mean?
Yeah, keep your head where your feet
are. Then you learn to duck.
Then you learn to duck.
You talk about like daily reflections and all that.
Eckhart Tolle. Sorry, go ahead.
Probably, I don't know, 3 years, 4 years now, every morning I send out between 70 to 90 individual texts.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Of the daily reflections.
Because I look forward to that.
That's
a great
thing. That may be the only contact I'll have with another alcoholic that day. And I don't care if they look at their phone and go, oh, this fucking kid again.
That doesn't matter.
I've had people ask me, can you please take me off this list? Absolutely, no problem. You know, but.
Really?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, I guess.
But a lot of times they're not sober anymore, and I'm probably making them feel like shit every morning. They wake up like, oh, no. But, like, that's important to me. I mean, do I miss days? Yes, absolutely. But, like, that's something that,
you know. Do you miss days? I don't
it means a lot to me. Yeah, once maybe in a while I do.
You're
you
human,
know?
Aren't you?
Huh?
You're human,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. But, like, one piece of literature that someone gets to read where they would not any other time.
Yeah,
you know?
Almost always fantastic.
Yeah.
It's a great way to start the day, when I have a minute to read it.
When you have a minute, you don't take a minute?
I he usually texts me like
he's probably already at work by the time I send
it. as I'm walking into work, so I usually at break I'll grab it if nobody's there's like sometimes the people are talking to you, so you pay attention to them. And
I noticed one thing in early recovery and throughout later recovery too, that discipline of that morning, getting your head and your feet together for the day.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
And people don't emphasize that enough. You know, and in treatment and everything, when you're looking at it, they have the morning group, the evening group. If you remember, check in, check out, all those types of things.
Yep.
Check in.
Where you put things out there.
Word of the day.
What was it? Deckard Danny from Worcester. The word was haphazard, and what did he say, hapazard?
Yes.
Hapazard. What the hell is hapazard?
Yeah.
Mess the day up, but that's huge, guys. That's so important when you're looking at maintaining your recovery. Because if we're not doing, as you mentioned earlier, doing the work, and each person has different work. You have people that go to 12-step fellowship meetings, people that attend church, people that go to the clinic, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
But they still need that discipline there, because the bottom line is you don't pick up a drink, you don't pick up a drug for a day. That's still the bottom
line.
And as long as that's happening, that is recovery.
Yep.
Now, I used to be very, very hard-headed, I will say. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I haven't seen you guys in 10 years, but the last 10 years have been an incredible journey into open-mindedness as to how to really really put everything together to not like do the perfect program, but to do something out there that's going to be effective, that will affect change for people.
Yeah.
You know, that incorporates all of those principles where, like, you know, somebody comes in and they're off their rocker. It's like, hey, you know what? Maybe they just need to go see the doctor because they have a medical issue.
Exactly.
Right.
Rather, you know?
That's what's so sad about it. A lot of people is they can't get diagnosed with a mental illness if they're always self-medicating, you know, and they can't stop self-medicating because they're nuts.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Even though the insurance companies require a diagnosis in order to bill.
Right, right. So these people are getting a diagnosis on paper.
Right, and then they think, this is what I am, this is what I am. And, you know, now I do a lot more mental health work now. And I'll have people come in and say, well, I'm bipolar this, I'm bipolar. Ooh.
Yeah.
Assessment and diagnosis takes a long time. They have to be tested. They have to meet criteria.
Yep.
For those of you that aren't aware of it, there's a book called The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Health Disorders. It's the DSM-5 now. It's at least 5 inches thick, and it goes through everything, and you have to meet criteria.
Yeah.
There's certain things. You know, bipolar does not mean up and down. And for people in substance abuse that are recovering, you need between 12 and 18 months clean and sober. Problem being is getting people not to use for 12 to 18 months.
Right.
So what do you do? You got to put a Band-Aid on it, put something in there, lower level medication sometimes for them. But it's huge. If you know somebody's depressed and suicidal and everything, you know what? They need to be evaluated. They need to go to the ER. They don't need to be told, you're not writing on your fourth today. That's why you want to kill yourself. No.
Yeah.
They actually have a mental health issue. And
it's
called Zuhl diagnosis, and enough doesn't get paid attention to that. And I'm focusing a little on that because I'm remembering back at Turnabout. You know, it was like I did the intakes. I did the assessments when people came in. And I did my best not to bring people in on medication because of how the place was.
Yeah.
You know,
because
it was a very intense program. And people that have certain histories can't do that.
Yep.
So I worked back then. That's... But still, if I'd known now, there would have been even more of a success rate for that. Because when you look at treatment and people in recovery that are actually in treatment, that are in the business, there are not enough of us. There aren't enough people that have actually, you know, gone to like a 12-step meeting, introduced themselves as an addict and alcoholic, you know, sponsored and done
that. Is
there
a stigma?
There's a little bit of a stigma that we're only supposed to do that. And then what they've done is when you get into the mental health field, they have got different levels. And you're talking egos. You're talking. It sucks.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
That's why, you know, and I'm not bragging or anything, but I have busted my butt. I've got 600 hours left to fulfill the requirements to be a licensed mental health clinician. An LMHC in the state of Massachusetts. I just have to pass the exam. I have all the hours, my practicum, everything. I'm also, at this point, a licensed addictions counselor, an LADC1. I mean, all these things because it is so important that in the field of addictions and in the field of mental health, we have people that have a clue.
You
can't have somebody that just comes out of college. Hey, I want to help everybody. I'm 21, 22 years old, and throw them in with a house or a program full of 20, 30 guys or girls that are straight off the streets.
Yeah.
They chew them up and spit them out.
Exactly.
Right.
And all they know is textbook, you know?
Right.
Like,
I know you're
talking about the, you know, some people may need medication. I've had people that I've sponsored say, listen, I don't know. But this, what we're doing, isn't cutting it. And I say, listen, if you think you have a mental health issue, you go see someone who deals with mental health. I don't.
Yep.
But don't walk in there and say, this is what I have, and have them give you a script.
Yep.
No, you need at least like a lengthy diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a doctor. I can't tell you if you have a mental problem.
It's very difficult thing.
But do not walk in, because we all know, I can walk into a doctor's office and say, I suffer from this, this, and this, and this is the medication I'm going to get.
Here we go. Adderall, Klonopin, Neurontin, Clonidine, and
just look up the symptoms and say, this is what I'm going through.
Exactly.
I mean, it's so easy.
Right.
I could do it in the waiting room.
Today
I want to be bipolar. Here's the symptoms right here on my phone. Okay.
Yeah.
I need Klonopins is the symptoms I want.
I remember. You know, part of the program was we had to go and see these doctors. And I remember telling the guy, yeah, man, I get really anxious. Like, my palms start sweating and this and that. And I had never been in treatment before, right? So I'm freaking out because we used to go around the room, check out or check in. And I'm watching it and I'm getting nervous and my hands are sweating and, you know, whatever. And he's like, you may need this. I'm like, no, I'm not taking any medication. Is there anything else I could do? Like what? I said, I don't know, like a breathing exercise, like, I don't know, jump up and down 100 times.
This is the problem with the healthcare system.
And he says, well, yeah, of course. I said, okay, what is it? Oh, I don't know. Okay, but your script pad was ready to write me out something real quick without even talking to me for more than 30 seconds.
Right. Well, you know what I just heard on the Rogan podcast, actually, this guy was saying that by 2040, the percentage of our U.S. budget that will go to Medicare and Medicaid. Any guesses?
40.
100%.
Of our budget will go to Medicaid.
Would have to go to Medicaid and Medicare if it continues to the way it is going right now. So those programs are going away. Because you know that the Department of Defense isn't giving up their money.
No way.
Not at all.
Nope.
Which means that, again, here comes the need for people that are in recovery to step up to the plate.
And that's another thing, too, though, is like this whole recovery coaching thing. Like, I think that's good.
It is.
Honestly, I know a few people that are actually like, you know what? I have a job, but I'm going to go and get my LADAC. You know, I know a few people that are actually doing it, and they've been there, so they know. Yeah. Like,
what is it? LADAC?
LADAC, in the state of Massachusetts, with Bureau of Substance Abuse Services and Department of Public Health back in around 2000, they decided that substance abuse counselors needed to be licensed, okay, because there were too many paraprofessionals and too much, you know, stuff that wasn't working. So they came up with a licensing system and a criteria of hours, and, you know, I remember getting licensed right when it started. You had to have 10,000 clinical hours, and it was a lot of requirements.
Yeah. 10,000, huh?
10,000.
So how do you get clinical hours without a license?
You get clinical hours without a license by going and working in detoxes.
Oh, you clean the toilets, I see.
You clean toilets. Yeah.
You find a place to hide for 10,000 hours.
Yeah. My experience with detoxes is you're cleaning everything up and you're running groups because the counselor just doesn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah,
right.
And they throw you into it. You do internships. You do whatever you have to do for work to be able to get those hours.
Yeah.
And it's great that they've got the recovery coach. I've worked with a few of those.
Because you can still guide someone and help someone and steer them towards where they need to be, and you get paid for it, but you don't really have to. It's almost like you're a sponsor, but you're getting paid.
So
you know what I mean?
I could have got hours by running checkout and doing overnights at Turnabout.
Absolutely.
By going to sleep.
Actually, I can sign off on your hours from when you did work there.
Oh,
okay,
no kidding.
Okay, I can do that. I was your supervisor.
Yeah.
you know?
But I think it's important for someone to have some type of experience with this. Not saying that someone that doesn't can't, you know, give proper treatment.
No.
Because there's plenty of people.
In treatment, they will rip you right apart. When you're going into treatment, you've got therapists and counselors that are not in recovery, and then you have those that are.
Yeah.
And the ones that are, people, addicts pick up on it in half a second,
just
from how you talk, and they go right over to them, and they immediately staff split. What we do.
That's the thing about Turnabout was you had to get over on 30 addicts as well as the staff.
Right.
And you weren't doing that. You know what I mean? Nobody's getting over on the people.
A couple of them did.
Yeah. Well, sure. But I mean, you know.
They were good.
Yeah. You'd have to be real good.
Yeah, it was,
and you don't get on over for long either.
No.
We seen so many different people in that place, man.
Oh, I know it. Mike D, the first night I was in there, the second time I came around, right? I was in there, and I was in one of the rooms. It was like my first night, and I was sleeping on the bottom bunk. Mike D was this huge Italian guy from the North End. He kicks the door in. Bam, off the wall, takes the guy's mattress above me and throws him and the mattress off the top bunk onto the floor.
What?
And I'm like, whoa, what's going on? What the hell is this?
It was clean the floor time, wasn't it?
A little scary.
At 3 in the morning?
Yeah. Oh, I remember a couple guys calling me up like, dude, you got to come up here. This isn't like when we went through the first time.
It got a little crazy.
Yeah.
But you know what? It was good for me.
It may have been good, and I will speak for why. As many people, especially if you're a Turnabout alumni or you ever went through there, you may wonder, why were those crazy things going on at night? Okay, right. I have several answers as to why. We were incredibly understaffed at that facility, and as the operations manager at that point in time, I turned the house over to the control of the clients.
Yeah.
And the clients dictated the treatment at night and a few other things, as we didn't have enough. We just didn't have staff. We didn't have the staff. They had, you know, planned on, you know, moving things around.
Cut it.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want it to run the way it was running.
No.
But you know what? It was interesting because it did work.
Yeah.
It worked great.
You
guys, me and Tom, I'm sitting here listening to you two. Plus, there's still guys I'm still in touch with 15, 16 years later, because they took a set of principles that they were taught. Granted, it was shoved down their throat.
Yeah.
And, you know, I share a story.
We're stubborn, you know.
I share a story with a lot of people. I'm going to throw you under the bus right now, Tom.
All right.
If you remember Mr. President and your singing that night.
Oh, that was bad.
we had this is something that, and I use this in a lot of sessions when I talk to people on how interventions can work even if they're off the wall. Tom was put into a position where he needed to role play Marilyn Monroe singing happy birthday Mr. President to a graduate.
Awesome.
Now we had the entire community there and we're all trying to keep a straight face. Now Tom,
dude, no one smuggled in a camera phone and got some video.
We didn't have them. Tom struggled real bad with social anxiety at that point in time, as I remember.
Oh, yeah.
And he was, like, freaked out as it was. And so everybody came together and decided to do this to him. He sings it. He sits down in the button on the top of the shirt, right where he had two rolls of toilet paper put, went flying and hit the wood floor. The entire house was in hysterics.
Oh.
And
dude,
from that
I'm telling
point,
you.
From that point on, he was social, and that actually opened up your entire life because you were able to sit there and laugh at a situation that was totally ridiculous, and you had fun with it.
Well, that was an LE. That was a learning experience.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, I had many of those.
But and you know,
oh my god.
I remember Sweeney. He had to count rocks. He had to count how many rocks would fit into a five-gallon
pickle
pail.
Yep.
Really?
I gave that to him. I remember.
Then Dustin had to cut the lawn with scissors and a sundress.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was me.
I remember being in a unit at a house of correction, and I mentioned that I may attend turnabout. And people were like, man, you are crazy. They make you wear signs. You got to shave your head, blah, blah, blah. But then
there was no shaving heads.
Rich.
You guys did do a mohawk thing once. I remember.
I think his name was Rich Stapleton. He said, listen, if you need a place to learn how to live and live sober, that's a good place to start. I went through there. But I was confused because I was like, yeah, but you're in jail. And he was like, I just stopped doing what they showed me how to do.
Yeah.
And I'm very grateful for that talk, because the kid that mentioned turnabout and it stuck in my head is now serving life.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Remember Milky?
Oh, I was going to bring him up.
God,
we were talking about mental health, and I was like, maybe
absolutely.
You should.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, mental health issues. Absolutely. But yeah, I think he's in there for life.
He should. Well, I don't know if he should be or not, but I know that that's what comes with that act, what he did.
Yeah,
you know,
it does,
somebody,
unfortunately.
So.
Unfortunately.
That's what it is. And then he cut his hand off and went to a party with it.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. I remember when they went there and were investigating, because they had an idea that it was someone that was associated.
Oh, I was in the house at that point.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I was sitting out back in a chair with this other guy, and we were drinking coffee, and this helicopter kept swirling around the house. And then all of a sudden it was house meeting, and everybody's up in the big room sitting there, and then the police are knocking the door, and Dan's not letting them in.
Mm.
You need a federal warrant.
Yeah, that was crazy.
And he wasn't Milky. That was Milky went through the house 3 years earlier.
With
prior.
He was my roommate.
Yeah.
And he just dipped and disappeared in the middle of the night.
Right.
No, we didn't even hear him leave, dude. We didn't even hear him. We woke up. All his stuff was gone. Oh, like, yeah. He packed. And, dude, I was coming from jail. So if I heard a pin drop, I was, whoop, jump right up.
Yeah.
And no one heard nothing. This kid just ghosted. He just disappeared. It was insane.
That was my mindfulness bell.
Amazing.
Nice.
Mindfulness, very good.
Yeah.
It's a good practice.
Yeah.
You guys have talked some great stuff today. You brought some memories back. You know, I was just thinking, we had mentioned, you know, earlier a couple that aren't there. I was thinking Billy S. is no longer with us.
No.
John
no.
M. is no
Billy?
Longer with us.
Yeah.
From Southie?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah,
I seen him.
Kids out of Southie.
I seen him not long before he passed.
Yeah,
and it was pretty sad to see him in that state, man.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Because I remember him coming in. I remember still kicking like kung fu.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and
you know?
I do remember the biggest kick of all, and it was a probation officer from a court told this kid that it was a program. He didn't tell him. The kid thought it was a detox when he came
yeah.
in. And
oh,
if you remember
God.
When Cooper came in.
Oh,
oh
yeah.
My God.
Oh,
he came in, lined
bastard.
Up one morning. He's like, oh, I came to get comfort meds. And I looked at it and go, this is turnabout. This is not a detox. And here's a bucket. And that's.
Yeah. You want some Motrin?
That's how your recovery starts, guys.
You want some Motrin?
Yeah. 800 milligrams.
Yeah.
Yep, that's what we could give you. And
yep.
about it, you know?
But,
but he stuck it out. I don't know if he stayed sober. But.
He stuck it out for a long time. A lot of people have. Over the years, I've run into people because I've stayed in the field. You know?
As far as I know, Matt Peace still doing good.
Yep.
Matt,
yeah.
I haven't seen
teacher,
him.
Teacher. He's a teacher.
Yep. He's doing very, very well for himself.
Is he?
Very
good.
Yep.
You know? He
pretty,
is. We have
pretty
a
crazy.
Tennis, we have a tennis pro from the graduates that has a wonderful family and everything. And then I'm looking
tennis
at
tennis pro, huh? Wow.
Tennis pro. And then you two guys
That's
have
crazy.
Done incredible. Incredible.
Yeah. How about four graduates of the house move out to the same apartment and everybody stays sober?
Right.
How about that shit?
That tells
that,
you there
exactly.
are miracles that happen.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You know, it's crazy.
And then, of course, one moved away very quickly into the mansion to be
yeah.
Minor resentment at him? Minor
no,
resentment?
I have no resentment. I have no. I love him, and I got to talk to him. I haven't talked to him in years. But
hopefully they're all right, you know?
Oh, they are. I saw Sweeney not too long ago. He's in the union, too. He's doing really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
His first job, he went from turnabout over to the 99, which was right there. He's a prep cook. First job he ever had in his life.
Really?
Well, he's from the projects, and he used to deal oxys.
Oh,
yeah.
And he always had wads of cash.
Yeah.
Why would he go out and get a job?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. In those days, nobody has to do that anymore.
And that's something that you become addicted to as well.
Oh yeah,
you know?
The money.
Like why would I why would I get up and work 40 hours a week when I can work
mm-hmm.
10 hours a week and make 7 times as much?
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
And that gets you right back to, you know, where I was kind of getting a little preachy, I'm not enough of us in there.
Yeah.
The substance abuse field, they don't pay their people.
Oh,
they
it's
don't
horrible.
Pay the mental health, you know, they pay us.
Yeah.
They that's
but,
pay us.
Oh yeah.
But
substance abuse, it's like nickels and dime.
I was working at Warburton as the clinical director when I was moved up to that position, and I was making $18.67 an hour for that position. You know, now I share that not as a saying, oh, it was awful. No, it was the most I'd ever made in my life, actually.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know,
yeah.
because.
But still, like.
It's still
enough.
Crazy. Yeah.
Not enough to
and,
get
and
people
wanna,
in there.
And they want to pay fast food workers 15.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a director of a treatment center, 18. Come on.
Mm-hmm. And
you know?
What's going on is that's where there's a little struggle. You know, you mentioned earlier at the beginning of the broadcast on, you know, what's going on in treatment and everything like that. That's one of the biggest problems.
Yeah.
Still is staff retention. They
compensate people. More people will want to help. You know what I mean?
People that just are working, they're trying at the places that they're working, but they're more concerned, again, back to those numbers, they're not concerned with the individual clients.
That's right.
With understanding, hey, these guys have a disease, and there's an option with this disease. You die with it or you die from it. And
right,
there
yeah.
is no in-between. It's black and white, and they don't get it. You've got people that are dealing drugs on the night shift at some of these places.
Oh,
you've
yeah.
got,
yeah.
You got all the scandal like you do in regular life, but the thing is it's not being policed. They're not they're just not doing what needs to be done. There isn't anything like Turnabout around anymore.
No.
That's right.
No. With the exception, I do take that back, with the exception, there's a place in East Boston that's awesome.
Oh, really?
They still rock. They still remember.
Meridian. Meridian. Yeah.
You know, Kim runs a phenomenal program there.
Yeah.
And it's still taking
We always
care
had to
business.
Beat them to the docks.
Oh, yeah. Procurement runs the produce.
Produce.
I used to love produce.
Listen. That was so good. That, having those things to do, like, gave us purpose.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, okay, I was kitchen crew chief from 3 days in until I was fucking leaving on job search. But
and even then, I'm like, Chris, I need to do graduation.
But, like, that gave me something to do. That gave me accountability.
Yeah.
That taught me a lot.
Well, that's what I say about the therapeutic community, is it brings you a little bit from that side to this side. If you have a little bit of responsibility and you feel responsibility for the house,
yeah, and
you have to
work for something a little bit,
you can't be one of these snowflakes sitting there in mom's basement playing video games.
You really can't.
And you know what I want to do as my dream. My dream, okay, is to bring Turnabout back. I would like to throw off the shackles of a publicly funded model.
Yeah.
By somehow, not by having the client pay either, but also by producing some sort of easily produced product or service in-house that the clients can help on.
That's Tom. I think that's a great idea, and you might be shocked, but there's a program that's been written over the last 10 years that's a little over 65 pages in length that details something very, very similar to exactly what you're talking about. And when the right licensures are required and everything like that, that will come to pass.
That's
something that is missing, you know. And granted, you know, I can say during my tenure there and everything like that, were there things that were screwed up? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Did I make mistakes?
Yeah, I mean,
oh, yeah. You know, an awful lot of them.
You fail forward.
But
that's
the thing is, guys, is that was a program that saved people's lives, and that was the goal of that program.
I still meet people like that were like, oh, I went through there 30 years ago, you know?
Back when they ran it that way.
How we got this space to record this podcast.
That's right.
Sharing with someone. By the way, we're over at a New Way Recovery Center in Quincy. If you know, you're in recovery and you need some place to go, come check it out. There's all types of meetings, groups. But I came here. I had to present this idea to the community. Once again, the community. I had to present it to them, and they had to approve it. And talking with Warren here, and he says, I said, yeah, I went through Turnabout and Haim. He goes, so did I, you know, and it was 10 years before me.
Yeah.
And, you know, like that place definitely saved lives.
Well, see, being a part of is a big thing,
yeah,
too. And
huge.
If you remember, if you ever really, I mean, sure you know about it, Dan, is the first therapeutic community was in California, and they had a language of their own, right? And it's like, when you're in the community, you're a part of, and you feel a part of, and you want to be protective of that, and you're protective of your sobriety.
Yep, yep.
And they had little languages, little things like the high roll table, like you're gonna get a pull up,
yeah,
like you are right there,
yeah,
like
oh, yeah,
all that stuff. You know what I mean? And you say that to an alumni now, and they know exactly
oh,
what
yeah.
you're talking about,
yep.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So
what's really going on?
So that's another piece. What's really going on? Stay no matter what.
Yeah, yep. Hot seat that blank.
Yep.
Oh yeah, hot seat. Yeah, yeah. That's
I enjoyed hearing that. You know what you guys just you brought up and you reminded me of is that was such a part of my life. That was my life.
Yeah.
You know, I could not have imagined doing anything else, and I would still be doing that. But you know,
yeah,
I needed a learning experience myself.
Yeah, everything
okay.
happened
That's
the way it.
It
was supposed to.
Yeah,
that's
you
right.
Know? Whether
that's
we
right.
like it or not,
yep.
you know, it's
yep.
we can plan all we want, but. You know, I know my half hour laughs at me sometimes. Oh, you think so, huh? He answers all my prayers. Sometimes it's nope.
Yep. my favorite answer
that's
is weight.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
That's my favorite of all time. Weight. But
yeah,
you know,
addicts love that.
It is. It's one of those things, you know, what do we do out there to help the next sick and suffering addict and alcoholic?
Yeah.
Whatever we can. Whatever we possibly can to make it so that they have an opportunity to be able to afford what you guys were able to have and everything like that.
Right.
You know, because that was something that was just an incredible experience for everybody involved. And I have to thank both of you very much so. You know, you sent me that text, and when I left that program and everything, that was not on good terms.
Right.
It was a really shitty thing that went down. Yeah. It had to go the way it had to go, but it was a really bad thing. And I had zero communication with anybody. It was just like, whoop, boom, you're gone.
Yeah.
Seven years of my life, completely gone. See, you guys went through that place. I grew up at that place.
Yeah.
You know, because I had no idea what it was like to be assertive. I had no idea whatsoever what it was like to work as a team.
Yep.
I didn't know any of these things whatsoever. I remember Randy. Okay, may he rest in peace.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he's gone? I didn't know that.
That's what I had heard, you know, years ago. He, on my, like, third day he met me or something, he called me a gefilte. And a gefilte is a fish that does not have a backbone.
Yeah.
Okay?
Oh.
As the operations manager and then eventually the director of Turnabout, I got a backbone, and that's thanks to the clients.
There was no way you couldn't have.
You taught me that, and today I'm capable of using all of the stuff that I was taught there by the clients.
I still use it, dude.
It's incredible.
All the time.
Yeah, me too. That assertive piece, that is so crucial to life.
Yeah.
Because you don't grow up understanding that, or a lot of people don't, and I didn't. And what I knew was, it's all cool, man. It's all cool, man, until it wasn't cool, and then I blow up.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yep.
It's not, oh, excuse me. Could I just talk to you for a minute? I have a problem with this.
Yeah. Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Exactly.
It's
like, no, it's all good. Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yep.
You know?
And
don't worry about it. And then a week later, you're like, I'm going to fucking kill you.
Yeah, and assertive is a huge lesson. That was huge for me. I was like, wow, you can actually pose an objection with a smile, in a nice way, respecting someone else's time, respecting someone else's opinion, and expressing yours.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And it's like,
basically tell them to piss off in a very, very nice way.
that brings me to another book that was huge for me, that I read several times in recovery. It's called The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. So when you know where you're going, when you have a goal, you begin with the end in mind, you have a goal, you know where you want your life to be, mm-hmm. and where you want to go, and you have a less of a hard time saying no to people and things that you don't include that because you have a bigger yes. I want to be sober. It's a bigger yes than you know, this guy over here who's, you know, he's been really good to me. You know, he fronted me lots of times and, you know, he's down on his luck and I'm just going to go with him real quick. No, I have a bigger end in mind. I have to go this way. And that's important. You got to be able to say no. You got to be able to be comfortable and confident in yourself.
Yep.
Because you have a bigger yes, a bigger agenda. You know.
Awesome.
But anyway, how much we go? Oh, we went.
Oh yeah.
See, it goes by so quick. Yeah, it goes by quick. This was awesome.
Yes,
this
it was really good. Definitely was.
Thank you so much, Dan, for coming. I appreciate it.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, and thank you for what you did for us at Turnabout, too.
Thank you for what you did for me. You brought a dream back, and, you know, I watch an awful lot, and you're going to like this, okay? Because I do watch an awful lot of Christian television. And
you do?
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, and one of my favorite preachers out there, and, you know, he's like always saying to keep the dream alive. And for me, Turnabout was that dream. It really was, yep. And it will be again, you know. And you brought that back tonight, and it reminds me of there's more out there to help people, and there's more things. So
yep.
That's all I got. I want to thank you guys. Thank you.
All right, we're gonna be launching soon. We're gonna have our social media going soon, and thanks, you guys. And that's a wrap.
Yeah, lolterms.com. I live in this world full of anger and hate.